My name is Claire.
All right, let's do the whole thing then. Let's say your full name. Hi, my name is Jonna Bechtolt.
My name is Claire L. Evans.
Together, we make something that we call Yacht.
Bios are for sissies. Sure. Typical history is a waste of time. If there's enough material on you to, you know, to fill many, many sewing machines, so it's like, why bother? But we'll just do, let's see, there was UK to Portland to LA, there was Madison to Seattle, to DC to Portland to LA. So I want you to each tell me something that's kind of like, it's not like I need your hidden secret that nobody in the world knows, but you also have the option of lying. So each give me a little tidbit that's just completely irrelevant to everything else that everybody knows already, because everybody knows everything in this lovely blogosphere we live in, right?
You didn't mention that I grew up in Astoria, Oregon, and that's a small town where they filmed Free Willy, Kindergarten Cop, Short Circuit, Benji, The Goonies, and scenes from The Ring and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, Turtles in Time. That's a fact. I tried to be. I wanted to be an extra in Kindergarten Cop, but it just didn't happen. A lot of my classmates were in it, and I didn't get to be in it. But I sat and I watched Arnold, and then his stunt double ended up dating my aunt.
I don't know. When I moved to the U.S. when I was in first grade, I had a heavy lisp and a British accent, which was tormented out of me by my fellow school children.
From moment one, this band has been high-tech right down to the name. And, you know, for the first six years, this was a solo project. So tell me about that. And I know exactly, look, I can do the, you know, 2007, you were on a record. But 6 years to solo, you know, solo's a very interesting thing these days, because you're either kind of like the, again, back to the singer-songwriter who plays at the hotel cafe and, you know, and is there every single night. Yeah. Or solo is somebody with a Mac and, you know, and the appropriate tools, you know. And yet, I don't think you were any of that. It was kind of a whole different thing, right? It was kind of like a band before it was a band, even though you were just you.
I don't think it was ever a band. I don't think anyone ever took it.
I don't think it's a band.
Yeah. I don't think it's a band now either. Yeah. No, I don't think anyone ever took it seriously. And neither did I. I still don't take it seriously. But, yeah.
Very seriously.
No, I put a lot of work into it. That's different than taking it seriously. It's my life, but I don't take my life seriously. I don't take human life seriously. That's why I kill. No. Yeah. It started off with me just like messing around with computers and trying to make computers do the work for me and trying to make computers create something larger than myself, which was a kid in Oregon not knowing what to do and wanting to talk and express feelings and ideas to as many people as possible, as quickly as possible. And the computer really helped shape and make sound that I was very interested in and watching other people do around the world and trying to just make something new, something weird and new and something fun. Yeah. And so it was a lonely process at first. It was a solo venture. That pivotal moment was just a show, random show in Los Angeles. I played in a gallery and Claire was in a noise band. She played. We were paired together by someone, some brilliant soul. Who was it? Was it Barr?
I have no idea.
Was it Bobby Birdman?
To this day, I don't know.
Was it Foot Village? Was it? It was someone from this scene of cool, noisy bands in LA in the early aughts. And yeah, they put us together, and then it was like at first sight. And then we decided to start working together almost immediately after that. Well, a year after that.
Yeah, not quite.
You go.
Not quite. We met in 2004, and we didn't start playing music together until 2008. But we collaborated on all kinds of other things. We did video and sort of like performance art pieces that we traveled around the country with. We went on a book tour.
Played at PS1 in New York.
We made a multimedia performance called I Love a Computer, which we played at the Kitchen in New York and a couple of other places. And we made all kinds of other things. I mean, it was kind of a no-holds-barred creative collaboration. But Yacht was sacred for many years, and I wasn't allowed in until we had a shared experience in the West Texas desert.
I love this quote, that your shows are outsized experiments in collective experience. At what point did you two figure out that you were not going to do the typical thing when you went out there on stage, that the people were going to have to kind of have a little bit of, you know, intuition into what was about to happen?
For me, as a performer with just a laptop, just a person and a laptop, from day one, I knew that I didn't want to sit behind the laptop and look like I was checking my email while music was coming out of the speakers. I wanted to make something completely different than that. And so that has carried over as a defining force of our live show. that's been the one element that we strive for the most, I think, is to make something that feels different than other shows.
And I think that I don't think we would really know how to do otherwise, honestly. I mean, I didn't come up as a musician. I was just like a writer for years, and I played in noise bands, and I'm not trained in any capacity. And so I don't even know how you're supposed to do it right. It's not a question of even making a conscious decision, I think, at least for me. It's like, I'm trying to do a good job and make it look like as much of a real rock and roll experience as possible, but there's just no way that it'll ever work. So in some level, I think we've just accepted the fact that the presentation is going to be this sort of conceptual, gestural thing more than a outright traditional rock and roll kind of experience.
I'm going to throw another quote out because I think about this all the time as we, again, old guy, right? Pre-computers, pre-cell phone, daughter who constantly says, "Dad, what was it like when we couldn't text each other?" But the quote that I really love and I relate to every single day of my life is using the computer like a punk rock instrument.
Yes.
Computers are completely not made to be punk. It is so completely the antithesis of what, you don't make a computer to be radical, you make a computer to follow directions.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, this sort of philosophy goes in a lot of different directions. One thing is that I think we're at a level now culturally where people receive all 90% of their cultural information from a two-dimensional plane, either be it the tiny face of the internet that is their iOS device or otherwise device, or be it a television or a computer. And what goes into that plane, making that flat plane, could, you know, traditionally has been a one-way culture machine, has been like people who are educated and trained and paid a lot of money to make culture. Now we live in a world where it's a little bit more of a two-way culture machine, and people like us who are using essentially pirated software and a little bit of gumption can design and make things that look on the two-dimensional plane just like anything else that can pass that test. And so we can slip in our weird ideas, and we can slip in our personal sort of like Easter eggs and all our subliminal messages in this dimensional space that people just can't tell the difference between it and something that is quote unquote real. So in that capacity, we're sort of like subverting the medium a little bit. But John has always used the computer like a punk rock instrument. If you saw a Yacht Show in 2006, it's like the whole time you're on the edge of your seat wondering if the computer's going to break, because it was always like tilted on its side and like wedged inside of a weird sculpture or upside down or surrounded by a weird geodesic crystal thing that was like inputting sound. So and both of us came up in sort of DIY culture in the Northwest, where punk isn't like buzz cut and or mohawk or leather jacket. Punk is Calvin Johnson and K Records and a certain sensibility of just basically by necessity doing things yourself, because there isn't much of a culture machine where you live.
Yeah, earlier you said that we were high tech, and we might have that appearance, but if you go up on the stage and look at our setup right now, it's all just a bunch of duct tape keeping everything together, including the computer. No, it's totally part of the fun, and we're proud of that. Yeah, I like that our appearance can be super high tech and everything that we output can look clean and designed and nice, but yeah, it's really just a bunch of kids.
If people didn't know you and didn't meet you and read half of the PR, right, and read the way that the interviews are aimed, they think these people are kind of scary, right? Because they've got this whole theory of life and they've espoused all this stuff. And then I went here, right? And I realized that, yes, the light, I understand. But do you know some of the other stuff that's going on?
Oh, yeah. We know everything.
I mean, oh, my gosh. We can go to the Shorthorn Pep Rally, right? Which I'm really kind of excited about, the Shorthorn. There is the 5K run, which I was really excited about, the marshmallow eating competition. The traditional hula dance on the lawn, the pie baking contest. You went there, you found the light, you got strange, right? That's the way every interview is focused. That's not the way I see it. So can we kind of do the lights thing in a way that maybe people will actually understand what it meant to you, and not that you went there and became aliens?
I mean, maybe we want people to think we went there and became aliens. It's a good story.
You have that option.
Listen, we realized at a certain point that the way that PR works or seems to work, at least in the internet age, is that you create a narrative for yourself that you then put out into the world, and 99 yeah, or someone does.
It's usually not the people.
Yeah. A narrative is put out.
You have control over your narrative.
A narrative is put out, and 99% of the world just hashes that in some form, sometimes even without changing much of the structure of the wording even. You know, it's like what you say is really, I mean, very few people fact check. And it's not to say that the Marfa Lights story is not factual, because it is very much true. We went to Marfa and it changed us in many ways. A little bit of the sort of the dogmatic rhetoric of this, you know, the discovering the lights and some of the language that we've used in the past has mostly just been an experiment in seeing how seriously people could take us. But it's true. It's very much true. You know, we moved out to the desert together. We lived in isolation, surrounded by great beauty and light and silence, thundering silence. And we met an incredible community of kooky individuals, and we drank.
Kooky.
Okay. And we drank the local groundwater, which has lithium in it, apparently. And we worked, and we came out of that very much changed people. And a lot of it does have to do with the lights. Just the fact that we are living day to day with this, like, totally unexplained paranormal thing that is also completely banal and part of life for a small town in the West Texas desert who have marshmallow eating contests and local football games and pep rallies and stuff. It's like regular people living with this crazy thing. And something about that is really profound to us, because it's a very rare experience in this day and age. It's very true stories. And it's like, you know, of course, anything, any of the strangest things in the world can be made totally pedestrian if you live with them. It's like, you know, every world religion is completely like this crazy grand historical narratives that people just, you know, internalize and live with, and it helps them live their lives, and it changes the way that they talk about the world.
So that's what we wanted to be for our fans and for new fans. We wanted to be a light for them. We wanted to be the lights for them. We wanted to give them an experience of seeing something weird, and then hopefully help them change and shape their life.
Yeah, because weird things give you perspective, even if you don't agree with them or believe in them. It's always been about communication for us, you know, like the tools that we have at our disposal are perhaps a little bit overwhelming at the moment, and perhaps they're the various sort of like narrative threads of each social network is overlapping or redundant or strange or useless, but it's just like different avenues for reaching people and having conversations with people, which is really what Jan has always been about, at its most direct form in the live concert and at its most sort of diffuse form in the form of, you know, the Twitter at reply or something. I don't know what the farthest out away from the live show is, but yeah, it's, you know, we don't even really care much about like the politics of individual social networks or anything. Of course, there are problems everywhere, but for us, it's like there are all these channels for people, and we wouldn't be where we are if we hadn't learned to exploit those early and to use those.
We wouldn't have gone to places like China or South Korea or South America had our records not been available through those weird avenues, like for free and for people who couldn't afford them. It's awesome.
When a yacht record shows up, you know, and usually for me it's a single or an EP way before it's an album. But when you turn around and you say, okay, you know, this is Shangri-La and this is the new one and whatever, what do you do? How do you actually make some sort of decision of what route you're going to take, because it's not definable.
I think, well, yeah, what you're tasting is just our genuine spirits, and there's no formula for how we do it. We've never done it the same way twice, and that's something that we were very conscious of. We never want to do it the same way twice.
But
we always want
to get fans that way.
We don't care.
Build a cadre of
I don't know. We take on albums as like these kind of self-contained projects where we have an idea, a little kernel of an idea for what an album should be like, and then we set out to make that idea as fulfilled as possible using every tool at our disposal. And sometimes that means we make a crazy techno song, and sometimes that means we make a rock and roll song, and sometimes that means we made something that is undefinable. It's just like what we're into at the moment. And there's like a strong sort of ideological undercurrent to each album. Means Shangri-La is about utopias, and Sea Mystery Lights is about the mystery lights and sort of mystery and ritual. And we begin with these kind of broad concepts, and then we whittle them down.
But now we're not even doing that. Now we're making single songs, sort of. The last two things we did were just singles. Yeah.
So now it's just kind of like there's a little something under our skin, and it has to come out, and that's just, we just do it to get the itch, to get rid of the itch, you know. And that's kind of all there is.
Who knows if we'll ever make another record again?
Perfume.
Yeah,
we
perfume.
Say unisex.
What does it smell like? Come
unisex
on.
Anointing
it,
oil. It's not a perfume.
Like teen spirit? What does it smell like?
I wish it smelled like teen spirit. No, it smells like sandalwood and vetiver and ylang ylang and hiba wood and cedar. It's a very, it's a rich unisex, smoky kind of earthy thing.
You could do the voiceover the way you just did.
I know. I wish we'd made a commercial for it.
It's a rich
Still can. We still can do it.
Yeah, it's not too late. We have plenty of bottles of left. No, we decided to make a perfume because it just seemed fun to work in a new medium. You know, we make songs, which are for the ears. We make videos, which are for the eyes. And we make texts, which are also for the eyes and also for the mind.
We make concerts, which are for the bodies.
We make cassettes, I mean, yeah, we make things that are for the body and for the mind and the eye, but we've never made anything for the nose. And I think that it's a fun way to try to play with narrative. Perfumes have a very narrative quality, the way that they evaporate and change from moment to moment. You know, we built it so that it would have a sort of story to it. It's based on this sort of grand romantic fantasy of a temple ritual, the morning after a temple ritual, where all the unguents have been spilled on the floor and the temple's on fire and the incense is hanging in the air and people are prostrate on the ground on the temple steps. This kind of like dystopian but also very Bacchanalian experience, which we hope is the feeling engendered by a yacht concert.
So I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. Okay. And it's two of your songs as the bread. Fantastic. It is. It's two of your songs as the bread. Okay. And then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.